Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the AfriCast. My name is Brendan Lotz, and joining me today is Robin Lichetti.
Hey, how's it going?
And Clinton Matos.
Hello again, everybody.
How are you guys doing this week?
Hot. Yeah. it's a bit strange because in America, all the news comes from America. They're saying how cold it is and the fact that they have load shedding kind of in America. It's very odd. But here in South Africa, we are sweltering.
Stage 3 load shedding, I'll have you know.
Is it stage 3?
That's what I saw the reports. It's level 3 load shedding. It was really weird seeing load shedding in a US report. But also, I think we do just need to, as humorous as it is for South Africans to see this, there's some real danger going on there because it's not just that they're without power. It is bitterly cold there because of a storm, and as anybody who's had load shedding in winter can attest to, not having power to keep warm is a bit of a problem. So hopefully Texas is able to sort out its power situation before long and people can be safe, because it's not fun. And also, I mean, we joke about load shedding in the US, but there it's been happening like continuously for like days on end, whereas here in South Africa it's only a couple of hours at a time. So yeah,
I think if Trump was still in power, you probably would have blamed it on the South Africans that like to immigrate to Texas.
Man,
all the farmers over there,
we sent the load shedding there over the internet.
There's a TikTok from a local creator called his name is Dylan Olifant, and he did this whole skit about how you when you grow up and you have a goal in mind, you can do anything, and load shedding did that. It was started off with small aspirations. It's so funny. Anyway, let's bring things a bit closer to home. This week, matric results are being released. Am I correct? Is it this week or am I
next week?
Next week.
It was a bit confusing because this week we got the announcement that it's going to be released next week. So okay. Let me explain it quick. So the government, the Department of Basic Education, has been saying for a while that results are coming on the 22nd of February, which is this coming Monday. But the problem is, it was a bit up in the air. Even though the government says, okay, it's happening, the problem was that, if you guys remember, there was a physical sciences paper 2 and a mathematics paper 2 that were leaked.
Yes.
And we didn't really know how that was going to affect the release of the results. Again, even though the government was saying it's going to be released, it's going to be released, we didn't know if they actually were going to be released. But now there is a council that overlooks the integrity of academia in South Africa called Umulasi. I don't know if I pronounced that right.
Umalusi.
Yeah, that's the benefit of the written word. I usually don't need to pronounce these, and we'll have links to everything we discussed today below. But they put out a 14-page PDF, which is basically their approval of the release of the exams. And it's not just for the government matric exams. It's also for the IEB and a few other exams. But I think the ones that people really want to know about are the government ones, which we'll discuss. But just know as we go, this will also apply to the IEB. So they basically looked at what is happening with these released exams, and basically they said no systematic irregularities were reported.
What does that mean?
Yeah, so it's funny that they try to use these big words, but then they don't really elaborate on it. And I pulled this quote from the 14-page PDF, and it says, having studied all the evidence presented, the executive committee of Umulansi Council noted that the isolated irregularities reported during the writing and marking of examinations, as well as the group copying case reported in 4 provinces involving 893 candidates. In addition, Umulasi has noted with concern the serious irregularities regarding the leakage and mathematics paper 2 and physical sciences paper 2. And it says, you know, despite all of this, we are satisfied that there are no systematic irregularities reported. So putting aside the very long quote, it's a very long quote, Flipper, now talk about the written word again. When you read out that paragraph, it doesn't come through nicely. Basically, what they're saying is, we understand that there was the leak. We understand that you're worried about that. But according to what we've looked at, they were, even though it happened across 4 provinces and involved almost 1,000 students, the way we look at it, it was isolated and it wasn't this big problem that affects the entire country. And because of that, the exams, in our mind, are still sound, so they can be released. So it's quite funny. They have an exact figure here, 893 candidates. It doesn't say where they got that from. The last time the DBE commented on this last year, late last year, they were saying, you know, with the internet, how can we know for sure how many people? And I agree with that. How can they know for sure how many people? Mm. But again, this is the counter that overlooks academia, and they are saying it's ready to go. Now, it's funny. They've said to the DBE that they want them to put together a quality assurance of assessment report and an improvement plan by the 26th of March, 2021. I don't know if those are just forms that they have made up themselves or if the DBE has those gathering dust somewhere. But basically, they said to them, listen, you messed up. We want you to tell us how you're going to go forward. And despite that, they've also said that they commend the DBE for putting together the exams, even though 2020 was a train wreck. So it's a very weird report. Yes, there was a breach, but it was isolated, even though there was almost 1,000. Yes, it was hard, but we commend the DBE, but we also want them to put together a report saying how they can do it better next year. So it's weird, but the takeaway here from reading all of it is that the matric results, barring any big fiasco, should be out on the 22nd of February. What do you guys think of that? Did you expect them to say everything can go ahead, or did you think those leaks were going to put something in the gears?
Well, I mean, of course they were going to say that. It seems to me that Umalusi is perambulating on the outskirts of veracity, if I'm going to use it as flowery.
Whoa, hang on there.
Robin had that to go. He had that in the table. Like, I'm going to use it today. Today's the day.
What does that even mean?
It means they're just talking, they're waffling and talking a whole bunch of nonsense. The fact that the Department of Basic Education said that they were going to go ahead with the exams and not force any rewrites already set everything in motion.
Yeah.
So for Umalusi to essentially discredit the exam results, that is such a huge mess that it would create. I think they kind of have to now bite the bullet and just say, let's just go ahead as is. Yes, we've discovered all these problems. And now, as Clinton alluded to, they're going to try to put together a plan for the 2021 matric exams, which I'm sure will prove as chaotic because the school year hasn't started off well either this year. So, yeah, to me, it just seems like Umalusi were trying to cover for the Department of Basic Education and everyone saying it's like the governing bodies are looking after other governing bodies and everyone's just making sure that everyone's got each other's backs so that there's no real fallout. But to my mind, it was already set in stone when the DBE said there were going to be no rewrites.
It feels like
a formality with it. The government's like, it's happening. And then the other arm of the government is like, oh, okay, it's happening. Sorry, Brendan, I'm going to cut you off.
I think Robin has a point there. When the DBE last year said that they weren't going to do rewrites, I think in everybody's mind that meant that, okay, well, we're just going to push forward ahead here. But I do wonder... I wonder if we weren't sitting in the middle of a pandemic and a lockdown that makes studying and that sort of stuff and just writing exams so much more difficult, if this would have been different. Like, if they had found like 800 people had cheated or attained the papers that were leaked, I wonder if they wouldn't have maybe changed their tack and gone, okay, well, everybody... tomorrow you're rewriting your maths and science exams. So I do wonder if the pandemic didn't have an influence on how this report was arrived at.
Well, I'd say yes and no, because if you guys remember, they did want them to rewrite those exams at one point.
Yeah.
But then various people took the government to court and then they reversed their decision. So I think regardless of the pandemic, the government did want them to rewrite at some point, and then they walked back on that decision. But that being said, maybe the court case would have gone different if there wasn't a pandemic. So I understand what you're saying, Brendan. But, you know, in writing the story and in writing about the matric exams for 2020, I was looking up leaks, and it seems that every year there's a leak paper. So again, 2020 was different, but I don't think the government would have done anything different. So yeah, I mean, is there going to be leaks this year again in 2021?
Probably.
Yeah, probably. That's how it goes, right?
Well, you just got to fix the printers, right? Because that's where the whole big leak came out from, someone's printing error.
Allegedly. Let's not say that's where. Definitely. Allegedly. must put allegedly in things. I am curious to see what the overall results look like for 2020. I see that the IEB, the Independent Examinations Board, has reported its matric results for 2020. And
if I'm not mistaken, Brendan, those are preliminary for now.
They're not mistaken. Okay.
Yeah, I might be wrong there again. Like I said, I've been focusing on the government exam.
These were released at midnight on this morning. Just to give you a quick overview, the recorded matric pass rate was 98.07%, which is actually a decrease, though very slightly, from last year's 98.82% or 2019's 98.82%. So there was a little bit of a dip. The CEO of the IEB, Ann Oberholzer, said that 88.42% of the cohorts achieved entry to degree study, 8.14% qualified for entry to diploma study, and 1.5% achieved entry for study at a higher certificate level. Those numbers are mostly higher, except for the number of students that achieved entry into degree study. In 2019, it was 89.51%. So the pandemic has clearly had an effect on the independent schooling system. And I would argue that they were probably, I don't want to say better prepared, because nobody was really prepared for this, but I think they
had more resources.
That's exactly what I wanted to say, Clinton, is that they probably had more resources, more money to be able to afford putting things into online learning. I'm very, very curious to see how different these numbers are compared to the public schooling system.
Well, we will see on Monday. And on that point, I just want to speak, if there are students listening to this, I just want to give you guys a rundown of how to actually get your results, because it's a little different this year and you should just take note of it. First of all, let's start with online stuff. You can just go to the department's website and going into your details. Now, while I would recommend doing this because it means you don't need to leave the house, the department hasn't updated their website yet. If you go to the results page where you're supposed to put in your exam number, it still says 2019. So I don't know what's going on with that. Maybe on Monday when the results are out, that will change. But I just want to say that's your first point of call. But just note that it's showing last year. So if you get an error putting in your details there, don't freak out. It might be that the website hasn't been updated yet. Another way to get it is News24. They have a website. It's basically a landing page. Right now, you can go to it on Monday to get your results, or right now you can put in your email address and they will actually email you when the results are out. And those are your two points, port of call. Those are the two biggest ones. I know like the Sowetan also has a portal like News24, but we just use News24 because that's the one we've been using for years. When we track these stories, they're very well known to have all of this. So those are your two ways to go. And then IB, again, we're not focusing too much on them, but they also have a website that we'll link to that you can get your results from. Now, we also wanted this year to look at ways you can get your results without data, without needing to go online. So I'll go through those quickly. I'm sure everyone knows, but it's important to remember. And also with the physical ones we're going to talk about, the offline things, it's nice to get a newspaper, for example, that have your results in them just to keep as a keepsake. And that's actually the first thing we're going to talk about. Almost all the newspapers will have the results printed in them on Monday. You can go down to a newsstand wherever you go to get a newspaper. I know they're not as popular as they used to be, but newspapers will have them. They won't have your full results. They'll either say if you have a bachelor's pass or diploma/high certificate, so you can get one of those. You can go to your high school usually. Now, again, this will be changed because of COVID. Usually you could just go to your high school on the day to receive, I don't know what it's called. Every school calls it something else. It's basically just a piece of paper that says you did pass. It's not your full result. So those will come later, but your high school will usually have that. But again, because of COVID, your school might say, please don't come because it just puts a strain and it puts everyone at risk. Talk to your high school. I know Matrix probably don't want to go back to the high school. They just want to leave that in the dust. But they probably will have something for you. Call ahead, speak to your teachers and your educators. They will tell you what to do. Some of them might want you to come in to do something else aside from get your results. Again, that depends on a school-to-school basis. Now, these are two things, the SMS and USSD, which is you dial or something on your phone to go through a little menu. This is being done with the SABC and the Department of Basic Education, where you can SMS your exam number to 45856 for 150. Now, this is something that I wanted to talk about because it changed. Last year in 2019, and I think in 2018, they actually had a different SMS number, and the SMS usually only cost R1. So now they've changed the number, and now it costs 50 cents more. So again, I wanted to write the story up. If you were a student or if you were a parent, I don't know, had another child who matriculated another year, the number has changed and it does cost slightly more. So please just keep that in mind. We'll have that number again in the link stories. And then the last way to do it is to dial *120*45856# #, and then you go through the thing there, and that costs R1.50 per minute. So it's more expensive, I would suggest, rather going through the SMS. So there are other ways to get your results. Again, like I said, the Sowetan has their own portal, but those are ways to get it online. Those are ways to get it offline. Again, we'll have a link to all of that. And this isn't really news, but I just want to ask you guys, how did you guys get your matric results? Do you remember?
I went out to get a newspaper at midnight because you could still do that back in my day. And then in the morning I went to confirm by getting my results at the school. But also, this was in 2005, so very different to where we are today.
And you, Robin?
Yeah, I was also got my results many eons ago, like Brendan. I was, weirdly enough, on a fishing boat.
What?
Yeah, I was on a boat out in Breda River. I was on a boat with my father and grandfather, and we're fishing, and then a mate of mine called me. He went to go get a paper and said, yes, you got the exemption.
Yeah.
So great stuff. I headed back to shore, and at the resort we were staying at, there was an ADSL dial-up computer.
Oh my God.
Took about an hour to eventually log into the site, and I got my results like that. Yeah, it was quite the day.
Wow, you had ADSL back when I got my results. We just had a dial-up router at home. Like a very, like it was still, if somebody picked up the phone, the internet would disconnect. Man.
So you guys probably think I just went online because I in 2013. That's not the case. It's a whole sordid story where I actually got very sick and I was in hospital when the matric results came out. I didn't actually get my exam results until I was out of the ICU and I was at home, and then I just got my results in the mail. I can't remember if the department or my high school sent it to me, but yeah, I was just basically dying in the hospital when the results came out, and then when I was finally at home, I just got in the mail, and I was like, oh, okay. It's like the least of my worries right now. I was just in the hospital. So yeah, I didn't just go online and get them like most people probably think. So,
kids these days, hey, they'll never know the hassle of having to scan through a newspaper looking for your exam number.
Yeah, and I think also some high schools, again, like I said, it depends on the high school, but I think some of them also like print stuff out and put them on a board outside, and then everyone like gathers around and looks at them. I've seen pictures of that in past years when the results have been released. So I'm sure we'll see lots of pictures like that on Monday. And before we move on to the next topic of the podcast, I just want to say good luck to all the students. You've had to put up with I think, the worst year in living memory. When I say the worst year, people are like, oh, what about the wars? I'm like, okay, in living memory then. You guys have had to put up with a lot, and I can only wish you the best of luck. It's not the end of the world, no matter what your results are, you know, good or bad.
Yeah.
Just try to keep a level head, and congrats for making it so far. A lot of people didn't. So, yeah, that's the matric results. We'll need to wait till Monday to see what happens. Everyone is, even people who aren't in school or don't have children, they're very anxious to see the results, because I think people are expecting the pass rate to go way down because of the pandemic. But we'll have to see. That's happening on Monday, and you can check out all the links to everything we mentioned below.
Right, moving on. Facebook is in the news again this week, though not by its own volition. So I suppose there are instances. But for today's podcast, we're talking about the Democratic Alliance calling on Facebook to come to Parliament. Robin, you covered the story. Do you want to give us some context very quickly?
Yes, right. So the DA forward a request to summon Facebook to Parliament to discuss the spread of misinformation on its platform, and find out what the processes it has in place are, and to kind of create a dialogue as to how government can have a greater input as far as that goes. That was at the beginning of the week. Boomzile Van Dam, a really, I guess, high-profile online entity within the DA, put out this press release regarding the request. And at the time, no one at Facebook had said anything. So it was a fairly innocuous press release. I don't think it was necessarily sent straight to Facebook's offices. And I mean, that's also one of the points that Vanda makes in her...
We don't know. Maybe old Zuckerberg is subscribed to the DA's mailing list. We don't know.
I doubt it. one of the points she made was the fact that because Facebook has offices in South Africa, specifically in Johannesburg, that there has to be some kind of presence in the country. And because of that, they should be available to come to Parliament if summoned. At the time, like I said, Facebook hadn't given an official response. So we reached out to them via their PR and kind of found out, if you are requested, are you guys open to doing so? And they replied with a very, I guess, boilerplate-esque response, simply saying that they're always open to dialogue with governments and that they welcome the opportunity to do so with South African government. And a few hours after we published that story, then Facebook Africa kind of said, yes, we will have a dialogue with the DA. And not much more has happened since then. So it's very much a case of, okay, we've said yes, and now what's going to happen?
Does the DA have any legal muscle to even request that?
It's not a case of them summoning Facebook in the same way that the U.S. Congress often summons Zuckerberg and co. To discuss issues. It's more a case of them wanting to have a dialogue with them around misinformation, which I think we're probably going to touch on a bit more later in discussion, but I think it's more a request to have a dialogue than say, please explain yourself kind of thing.
Do you know what this feels like? It feels like if somebody on Twitter does a public tweet and at you and is like, please check your email. it's like your DM.
Yeah.
It's like they're calling them out in a way where it's like, you should probably reply just to be friendly. So maybe it's not legal, but it's peer pressure.
Well, I think there's definitely a high degree of politicking that is happening from the DA side. And I did find it rather interesting that they wanted to talk about misinformation, specifically COVID-19 misinformation, because we have seen other DA members post on social media COVID-19 misinformation.
Yeah, I actually wanted to bring this up. Sorry, I'm going to jump in here.
Brendan also had that in the chamber ready to go.
Yeah, you seem very enthusiastic. So yeah,
I'm very enthusiastic. So on the 2nd of February, while Joburg was sitting under cover of cloud, the DA MP, Natasha Mazon, tweeted out, "So what we know, COVID hates vitamin D, which your body gets naturally from sunshine. You should be in open spaces with lots of fresh air. Your government, our government, closed beaches and parks, and we all crammed into malls in tight spaces. This restriction will not age well, not at all. You know what didn't age well, Natasha? This tweet, especially alongside the statement from the DA.
Is that tweet still up, Brent?
Yes, it is still up. I'm reading it right now.
I thought it was like a picture or cached version or something. Oh, my God.
Now, The Citizen summed this up very, very nicely in a report in February, saying Natasha Mazzone dragged for her vitamin D comment. Because following this, a lot of people were like, what are you talking about? This is not true. You cannot fight COVID with vitamin D. Like, I'm sure that sitting in the sunshine will make you feel good, but it's not really a cure for this disease. So quite frankly, this is misinformation. So the fact that the DA now wants to talk to Facebook, well, sure, this was a tweet. It wasn't posted on Facebook. But the fact that the DA wants to talk to Facebook about misinformation, it's a bit like, did you see what's happening? This is not even taking into account John Steenhuisen blocking everybody. What's her name? Helen Ziller, like just tweeting anything that takes her fancy, working on a book called about how wokeness leads to brokenness.
Is that a working title?
I don't know. There's a go woke, be broke or something, I think is the working title or something like that. And I'm just sitting here going like, what are you guys doing? Can somebody in the DA give them direction, please? Because it seems like they're talking over each other at this point. It's just bizarre to me that a political party whose members have tweeted misinformation in the past, put misinformation out, that don't really have any sort of direction, is now saying, oh, Facebook, can you come and talk to us about misinformation and how you're fighting it?
Maybe they need, Brendan, you know, we're looking at this the wrong way. Maybe they honestly want advice. They're going to ask Facebook, like, hey, we got problems inside our own party. Can you help us out? Maybe that's, you know, we're looking at it the wrong way, guys. They just want some advice from Facebook.
I don't understand it.
Just kick out a few members and you get to go.
Like, and I understand that Facebook, but also my other concern here is, what is Facebook going to say that it hasn't already said numerous times over the last year? I mean, we know that Facebook has a policy in place for COVID misinformation, as does every social media platform, from YouTube down to Twitter. I mean, every single one has a social media or a COVID-19 misinformation policy. I'm not going to talk about things like Gab and Parler because, well, they're a ghost town and I don't really think that they have much influence at this stage. I could be wrong in future. But it really does strike me as odd that the DA is asking Facebook about misinformation when the company has, for the last year, at length explained what its policies are and how it takes steps to combat it. Now, fair enough, those steps could be directly related to the US, as we've seen numerous times, where Facebook or Twitter implements a policy but only applies it in the US.
Yeah.
But I struggle to think what's going to be different between what Facebook tells the DA. Because to be clear, let's just go over this quote again. The reason for summoning Facebook is with the view of asserting what steps the tech giant will be taking in tackling harmful misinformation. They don't specify South Africa. They don't specify Africa as a continent. It's just like, what are you hoping to find out here? You just want Zuck to get on a plane and hope he gets COVID. Like, what's the point here? It's very confusing to me. Does anybody else have any theories?
Well, to my mind, it kind of seems like they wanted to find out what it takes for something to be taken down from Facebook, or for action, like tangible action to be taken. And the only time that Facebook will do so is when a post incites violence. When it comes to the rest of their kind of terms of service, they are quite flexible as far as how it's applied. When it comes to COVID-19 misinformation, they've kind of set the tone very early among all the other social media platforms and kind of said how they're going to be tackling it. They've made resources available on their platform with regards to accurate COVID-19 information. So I'm not too sure what else they can do.
I just think they have, the DA has no real plan in this little juncture. I think it's just useless politicking, like Robin said. I think someone in the DA was like, hey, lots of news organizations are talking about misinformation, and a lot of it happened on Facebook. What can we do with that? And then somebody said, let's call up Facebook. I don't think they have an end goal or really any goal. I think they're just grasping at straws, and Facebook is like, oh, well, we have to respond to them because they're technically part of the government. That's what I think. I think there's no real...
So I'm glad you brought up social media again and news organizations with fake news, because somewhat related to this whole matter, earlier this week, the Daily Maverick had to retract a story published by Jacques Powell, in which he relayed an event or a version of events in where he was arrested at the waterfront in Cape Town. Since that story was published, however, some new information came to light and didn't exactly paint the journalist in the best of lights. And as a result of this, the Daily Maverick has spent the rest of the week being slammed for basically flogging misinformation. Now, the reason I bring this up is because at around the time that the Daily Maverick published an apology and a retraction and a correction, Phumzile Van Dam, the same person who issued this call to Facebook or published the call to Facebook, tweeted out this: Daily Maverick publishes opinion pieces. I find some of the excoriation unfair. If it was news coverage and patently incorrect, failure to fact check would then be an issue in my honest opinion, or in my humble opinion, IMHO, is what she said. Thankfully, she did say that, but, and this is a huge but, Jacques Powell is a journalist, and his own fact-checking should have happened. The man has apologized, but I do fear that he has created reputational damage to the media fraternity and DM in an environment where there already immense distrust of the media. So my issue was with the first part of that tweet, is that if it was news coverage and patently incorrect, failure to fact check would then be an issue. But I disagree, because the problem is that the way that Powell wrote that story, sure, it was opinion, but I can't just go on and say Apple uses small insects to power their iPhones. That's my opinion. And if I publish that on hypertext as an opinion piece, the danger is that somebody takes that and uses it as fact, right? And in the case of Jacques Powell's piece, there were some serious allegations there, including that the police had stolen R1,000 from him, that he failed to mention that he was drunk at the time. There was just so many problems that were presented as fact by the journalist in this opinion piece, and Daily Maverick should have fact-checked it. But now, my problem is that saying that it's okay because it's an opinion piece is just, it kind of stands in stark contrast to, hey, we want Facebook to find out how it handles, how it fights misinformation. I guarantee you, one of the first things Facebook will tell them is that you can't publish things that are fake and have them be on Facebook, or misinformation, fake news, however you want to call it. You can't publish that on Facebook as a media house, right? It just boggles my mind how you can have one set of rules. So as long as it's opinion, as if it's misinformation, it's okay. But that doesn't fly, because you, like, I can understand somebody saying, oh, you know, I don't believe that I'm going to get COVID because I do X, Y, Z. That's fine. But to go and say you won't get COVID because you sit in the sun, I mean, it just, my mind is burning at the moment, because I don't understand what the DA's point is here. Do you want to fight misinformation, or do you want to excuse it? Where's the line here? I'd really like to have a conversation with Phumzile Van Dam, if she is listening to this. I doubt it, but I would really like to have a conversation with her and find out what the DA's goal is here, because it's just so confusing at this point in time.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, two things kind of stand out for me. It's the first that it was very peculiar that she leapt to the defense of a journalist around this subject.
Yeah.
You would not find that in most political spheres.
Yeah.
And the second was that, to my mind, it wasn't an opinion piece, the original story.
Yeah.
It was a recounting of events from Powell's perspective.
Yeah.
So it should be taken as fact.
Yeah.
And essentially as news. So I understand Daily Maverick is a website that specializes in a lot of opinion pieces, but the original story that was published was fact, in my view. So on both counts, I find what Van Damme has done is very, very, very odd.
One of the most important lessons I learned from our former editor-in-chief, Adam Oxford, was that opinion pieces must be based in fact, right? That I think, is key to opinion. It's all good and well to have an opinion, but if your opinion is based on misinformation and stuff that is demonstrably false, then your opinion piece is terrible, number one. And number two, like any good publication would fact check it, even if it is an opinion piece. And I think that's the other thing that came out with the Daily Maverick thing, is that they failed to fact check it before they published it. And a lot of people, and the editor of the Daily Maverick went on about how, you know, sometimes you have to publish for the essence of speed. And I disagree. I'm going to draw a line in the sand here now, and that either you're right or you're last, right? It's not about being first anymore. You now need to be right. And yeah. I Clinton, sorry.
Even considering all of that, I don't know how the story could ever be an opinion piece.
Yeah.
It's a retelling of events. Anyway, like, we've gone over that. Also, the last time I wrote an opinion piece, it was that Netflix wanted to do what's called playback speed.
Yeah.
And a lot of the Hollywood elite were complaining, and I told them to shut up. That was my opinion. That's an opinion piece.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say it's a fantastic story, but that's an opinion that I hold.
Yeah.
I don't see how anyone could look at that and think that it's a factual story, but that guy's story about getting arrested, I don't see how anyone could look at that and think it's an opinion piece.
So anyway. I do want to just kind of circle back here, because we've been criticizing the DA, and I've said that they're probably not going to tell them anything different. What I think is key here, and Facebook has said that they are going to come and chat to Parliament. What I think is key during that discussion is not what Facebook is doing to tackle harmful misinformation. That is, while it's important, there needs to be, in an African context, added as a suffix to that statement, right? Because a lot of what we see as regards fighting of misinformation happens at a US level. I've seen a lot on Twitter, maybe less so on Facebook, though Facebook is very much an echo chamber, I find, compared to something like Twitter, which is a lot more open. What we see with misinformation is a lot of the time it's in a US context. And a lot of the time, sometimes it's things like commentary in a language that isn't English slips through the cracks. Because, I mean, these companies probably don't have localization in every region. We saw this in Myanmar with the genocide that happened there a couple of years ago, where Facebook didn't have a presence and wasn't able to determine that certain statements were leading to the attack of innocent people. Now, I think that it's important that Facebook come and speak to governments and say how it is addressing misinformation and that sort of thing on its platforms in an African context. Like, do you have folks that understand the culture in different countries? Because the culture within South Africa and the US is very different, and down to the language we use. I mean, it seems silly, but like things like braces, right, are two different things in two different parts of the world. And I mean, that sort of stuff needs to be understood by these platforms in order for them to police them correctly. Or do you think that I'm taking a stab here in the dark and making Facebook do more work than it should be?
No, I completely agree. You need that. You need context to properly police things. And I don't understand that why Facebook has a South African office if it isn't putting that to good use. As far as I can tell, I'm sure if I spoke to them, they'd be like, we're doing X, Y, and Z. But from an outsider's perspective, it doesn't look like it's that much.
That's a very good point, Clinton, because maybe that's what the DA wants to do, is make it shown that, hey, Facebook does have our is looking at South Africa and is policing its platform. I hadn't actually considered that. Robin, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I think from a policing perspective, I think localization is critical.
Yeah.
Especially if Facebook wants to leverage the users in a region, the least it can do is actually make sure that the actual platform itself is regulated with local perspective taken in mind. Mm. And as far as efforts it's making, from what I've seen, there is the third-party fact-checking partners that it has. So Africa Check in particular does a great job as far as dispelling rumors and misinformation. Mm. But I think integrating them more, and I think we've touched on this quite a few times before, as Facebook being a bastion for truth, or rather a harbinger, an arbiter for truth.
Yes.
It's something that needs to take more seriously. Mm-hmm. I understand that they've made their stance on misinformation quite clear, but and I know we've done a bit of DA bashing. I think that Van Damme does make a good point as far as there needs to be greater dialogue between Facebook and other organizations as far as how it handles misinformation, and perhaps a bit more transparency as to how that process happens.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you, Robin. I think that the statement may have been a bit poorly worded in terms of what the DA hopes to accomplish here. And maybe you're right. Maybe there is a bit more to this than just, hey, we want to talk to you about how you're fighting misinformation. And as we know, once you have somebody in a room, you can pretty much ask them anything you want. Doesn't mean they'll answer it, but I mean, you can make them face the music. And yeah, it would be good to see. And yes, like Robin says, like I especially have done a lot of DA bashing in this episode of the AfriCast. And I apologize, I suppose, if I've offended anybody in the DA or supporters of the DA. But I think that what I will give props to the DA for is the fact that they have initiated this conversation. And I think that I should give them credit where it's due, that they have tried to engage with the social media platform rather than just ignore it or try and tax it or try and put limitations on it without consulting with them and see how they could make things a little bit better. So, I mean, credit where it's due. Well done, DA, for starting that conversation. But I think that the content of that conversation is going to be very, very important. And I hope it's not just, so what happens when we get banned from Facebook? How long before we can start up an account again?
Yeah, at least they seem to know what this stuff is. I mean, I can't remember their title, but they had a high place in the government when it comes to technology. They call phones and
gadgets.
Tablets gadgets. I can't remember who exactly made that quote, but it was... Well, their position, it was a very worrying term because it seems that they don't know what they're talking about.
I also do hope that it's not a repeat of what happened in the US where
some older folks asked Mark Zuckerberg if he would share his hotel address or the name of the hotel he was staying at, and showed that they really have no idea what is going on on social media.
It was embarrassing.
And I think that South Africa's politicians are a bit more social media savvy than the gray suits in the US.
Some of them.
I mean, like, what's his name? Mr. Fixit, Fikile Mbalula. I mean, he's very big on social media. He enjoys it. But I don't really think that he uses it as a serious communication tool. But yeah, I suppose we'll just have to wait and see what Facebook says to the DA. Hopefully we get to see that conversation.
I just think if it gets serious, Zuck will actually show up. I don't think Zuck goes anywhere.
Not a chance.
He goes anywhere unless he's legally obligated to. But can you imagine those spicy Zuck water memes if he came to South Africa?
I think he's just going to sit in his backyard and smoke some more meats.
I think the most we would get is that he would do like a Zoom call.
A VR Zoom call.
Yeah. but we're not in a disaster yet. Do you remember that, my lord?
I remember that was so bad. Oh my goodness.
We're going to end soon, but I should just mention. Can you remember which country?
It was Haiti, I believe.
It was Haiti. Haiti had a natural disaster, and Zuck and co. thought it would be a good idea to visit the country during the disaster, not in person to offer aid, but via VR. Man, that was a weird thing.
And the worst part was the very cartoonish and happy-looking avatars that they used juxtaposed alongside this terrible destruction that had happened in the country. It was just like, wow.
That was very weird.
Anyway, I think that's going to wrap it up from us, unless anybody has anything else they want to add.
No. Stay safe, everyone. Flip it all.
But I think, that's going to do it from us for this week. Thank you so much for joining us for this edition of the AfriCast. Stay safe out there. As Clinton says, if you're waiting for your matric results, stay safe this weekend. They'll be out on Monday, correct, Clinton?
Yes, should be. Nothing goes wrong.
Yeah, if nothing goes wrong, anything can change between now and Monday. But thanks so much for joining us. We'll chat to you again next week. Cheerio.
Bye, everybody.
Take care.
Sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.